is thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not, thy compassions, they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever will be. Great is thy faithfulness, great is thy faithfulness, morning by morning, new mercies I see. All I have needed, thy hand hath provided. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me. Pardon for sin and a peace that endureth. My own dear presence to cheer and to guide. Strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow. Blessings all
in song. Alan is from the Redondo Church of Christ and part of our
family.
Extended family. And there is just a man of God. And, you know, I can do a lot of things. I cannot sing. I can only sing along. So thank you for coming. Welcome to everyone. Καλώς ήρθατε. And Achla was Achla. This is the new addition to my vocabulary, which is welcome in Arabic. It's a word that we say, you know, every day continuously in Athens. It's sort of a miracle that I'm here standing in front of you, and I just, you know, I don't mind standing, but I hate for you to stand. So if you just want to sit down, they won't let us bring any more chairs, so... Yeah, maybe Kathy, you want to go sit? Okay. Well, you can remember how it was to be students again, so get the floor. That is because so much has been going on in our lives lately, where, I can say it like that. It was very difficult to leave home, to leave Greece and come to our home, away from home here. One day I was coming and the next I was not. So finally, God used something very powerful, a challenge with the health of our dear sister down at Redondo. So then all of a sudden, Alexander and I and our daughter came. They only stayed for 4 days just to be there and just support each other in this difficult time, which is good now. It's all gone. And I got to stay. So God has escorted me and Alexander from the moment, you know, we decided to come. Not that he didn't before, but I mean in this particular journey. We woke up, you know, in the morning very early to get to the airport. And everything went so well. You know, sometimes when you start a trip like this, everything goes wrong. You know, from the bus to the taxi to the check-in counter. Everything was so smooth. And we get to the gate. And as we're waiting, we hear that the flight is overbooked and some people will be bumped out. You know, they'll kick them out. And I think, oh, my goodness, no. And the only reason I was saying that, not because I was coming here, it's because we had these two crates of olive oil, you know, with our bags, you know. Are we going to take this back home? What are we going to do? Well, surprise, we hear Mr. and Mrs. Meliritu, can you come to, you know, the gate right there at the counter? And the lady said, you've been upgraded. Woo! Okay. Way to go. Okay, to what? Let's see. Well, it's only business class from Athens to London. That's how we're flying. So, you know, we just go in. Too bad that I was very, very tired, so I slept all the way. I didn't get to enjoy the service or anything. So both of us slept all the way to London. We finally get to London, and I get a message from a dear friend who is a flight crew with British Airways. And he comes and helps us with the refugees every time he gets off. You know, they get these long times off. And his name is Rando. I call him Rambo. And he says, please give me your full names. And I thought, oh, why? Okay, so it was a text. I write him our full names, and then he says, no promises. Oh, well, we're just hanging around the airport for about 4.5 hours. You know, we ate, we went to the bathroom. We talked about everybody, you know, what this person wears and the other person. And, you know, finally, Alexander says, I'm going to the gate. So he's walking to the gate. And the way, Terminal 5, I believe it is, you have to walk through the duty-free. I mean, they've done it this way so you can shop. So I feel a gentle, you know, somebody just touching me. And it's a lady. She says, well, do you have 10 minutes available? I said, well, I got like an hour and a half, but I cannot buy anything. She says, no, I don't want you to buy anything. I just want to give you a facial. I thought, oh, okay. I said, but I'm not buying anything. She says, no, I don't want you to buy anything. Okay, you know, wonder what I looked like. I needed a little help. So there she starts putting all kinds of creams and stuff, and I mean, her hands were like, you know, healing, you know, my face that morning. And then when she finished, she said, so how do you feel? I said, bless it. She says, really? I never heard of that, you know, after a facial. I said, that's how I feel. God has blessed me. So then we go again to the gate. And I know, you know, my friend Angie from Nashville will tell you that no matter what a story I come up with, I mean, I don't make them up, you know what I mean, I refer to, she says, I'll believe it, you know. So we go to the gate. And again, they call my name now. And I go, and I thought, you know, it must be the cheese I have in my suitcase and the sourdough culture, you know, and the pistachios or something, you know, they're going to tell me. She says, you've been upgraded. What? You know what is international upgraded, right? It's a long, it's 11 hours. So she says, you've been upgraded to business class. So, and she says, but only you. Oh, okay, so we get on the plane. And I tell Alexander, you know, he's a little more hefty than I am. I'm pretty hefty these days, but I said, why don't you just, you know, take it and just rest, and then we'll just take turns. And sure enough, you know, that's what happened. For a while, we ate, and then I went to visit him. And the steward, the head steward, you know how they are in business class and, you know, first class, they look more aristocrats than the passengers. You know, this man with the English heavy accent, he says, well, ma'am, would you like to snuggle next to your husband? And I'm thinking, well, it's been a while. Yes, I do. Oh, where? There was, the seat next to him was empty. And I said, but I'm not up, I haven't been. He says, no problem. The dinner finished, so you just go ahead and enjoy it. Well, again, I didn't enjoy anything because I slept for 8 hours. And the next thing is, you know, get up, put your TV in. But I'll tell you, that's the way to travel. Yeah, I don't feel that we did travel. Anyway, it was very special. And it was the grace of God, you know, as always. So it's just amazing, you know, to be upgraded from where you are, you know, in any level of life. I just want to say that, you know, and I've been in a pretty good mood for the last week. It doesn't last that long, usually. But I really want to share with you now something something more than Alexandra's and my, you know, experience of traveling in comfort, about some people that are not traveling in comfort, you know, on the contrary. You know, they're traveling with the worst, you know, in the worst of possibilities. And I know that's why you came here today, to hear what is going on. Not what we're doing, not what this refugee crisis is all about, but what God is doing, which is much more important than anything else. You know, we have a perspective of what's happening, right? We get information from the news, we get information from people we know. I hope your perspective will change in the next, you know, 45 minutes. And of course, God has his perspective. So difficult for us, you know, to touch that. But maybe we can try this afternoon. You know, you say, I think, diagnosis, you say, or prognosis. What do you say when a patient, who got a doctor here? How easy. You say prognosis when someone goes and the doctor says, well, that's what's wrong with you. That's what
diagnosis. Diagnosis is okay. What you might expect.
Okay. Diagnosis, prognosis. They're both Greek words, so I got them confused. Well, one or the other, you know, whether it's the prognosis or the diagnosis for the humanity, it was never good. I mean, there was never a time, there was never anything in us that would indicate that everything would be okay. Everything we did, everything we are, always indicated that there's going to be problems. And God knew that, right? Before he created us. And there is this view that we have about who we are, and the view of how we see, you know, the situation and the circumstances around us, that it's a very small picture, because we are finite, you know, we're not sovereign, we're not omnipresent, we're not faithful like we should be. So we have this small picture of the reality, almost as looking through a keyhole. God knew very well what we would do. He knew very well how we would treat him. And that didn't change his mind about anything. He still created us, and Jesus still came to earth for us. In the Garden of Eden, God had the first experience of how we would treat him. We disobeyed, we betrayed him, and we did our own thing. Still, his mind was not changed. He never stopped hoping. God knew and still took the risk of creating us. It didn't work with angels, because there's a second the first creation was with angels, and angels rebelled as well. That was Satan. You know, he could have not created us, but he did. And he did, just like we have children every day. We don't have any guarantees that our children will graduate on the fourth year from college, or they will go to college at all. We don't know if they're going to have children outside of marriage. We don't know if they will become scientists or engage in the drug culture. But we still have them, hoping. This is the risk of loving, because we hope. In the same fashion, Jesus ate with Judas, washed his feet, gave him the money of the disciples' club. For us to know that Jesus always hopes, even when he knows. So this is God, but we're not gods. So what do we do? How do we deal with all that is happening in the world right now? I'll say again, this is not just about the refugees, and I know it's kind of a cliche, the refugee crisis, and so many people come to Greece to help with the refugee crisis. I think it's bigger. I think it's much, much bigger. It's about the crisis that we have as humanity. Because maybe they're affected in some way, the refugees are. You know, they're chased away from their homes. You know, they try to cross, you know, the sea on little on little, you know, dinghy boats. They're treated horribly many times by the different organizations, and I mean the government organizations, as if they deserve this. I mean, you know, they were just fine in their homes. Why they should be, you know, in country number two, because they first go to Turkey, and then they come to Greece, and then, you know, they seek asylum in the third country, and it's like, you know, just leave us in our country. You know, stop the war, and we will be just fine. But that's not how the world works. So how do we survive in all this if we care? And how can we thrive? How can we be part of what God is doing? Because God is not absent from what's happening. He's never absent. Not only he's not absent, but he's capitalizing. He's investing in what humanity does daily. How do we find hope, strength, and vision about tomorrow in all this? You know, the human perspective is, you know, nothing is going well in this world. You know, we're just going from bad to worse. You know, the morals, the state of the church, you know, how the church is dying or not dying. All these negative, natural, you know, feelings we have and observations about life. But this is us, because we don't know tomorrow. We're just suspecting, we're assuming. At the end of the book of Revelation, we see that that says revolution here. It is a revolution. Just, what do you call that? Auto spelling. You know, God's plan will be executed regardless of who we are and what we say or what we do, right? Nothing will change that. There is an eternal sovereign plan that does not have a beginning and an end. It's a circle, and nothing can interrupt this. In the story of Esther and Mordecai and Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, I think you call him, the king, the result was doubtful, right? Mordecai did not exactly know what would happen. He was just trying his best. And his best was very small, you know, just counting on this one, you know, young woman. He was kind of very, you know, dire, very small. And this only brings me to say that, you know, we all have a voice. All of us in here have a voice. And sometimes we think that our voice is not big enough, is not loud enough. I don't mean literally, you know, mine is, but, you know, we think that, oh, you know, what if I say something? Nothing. Well, it does happen every time. You know, it's very important what we say, when we say it, and how we say it. Well, here is, you know, Mordecai trying, you know, to do his best, encouraging, you know, his niece to speak, you know, for the Jewish people. And he asks her, you know, and he says, well, will you be silent? Will you be indifferent? You know, she would save her own skin, you know, because she was pretty and everything. And you know, I'm sorry for that expression, but that's translating from Greek. But here is at stake a whole nation. A whole nation is at stake. Interesting. You know, so he asks, will you be silent? Will you do something? Will you say something? And, you know, as the story says, and, you know, the rumors say that food is always involved in major decisions, right? So we see that there's a banquet here. There's a banquet where a decision would be taken. And I have the conviction that there's something about table fellowship and banquets and food that melts the heart. And God uses melted hearts to form his plan. And that's exactly what happened here. You know, Xerxes was in a good mood. And he just, you know, he was so kind. Probably unlike, you know, any king would be at, you know, at his position. When my Muslim family from Greece heard that I was coming here, not all of them, but some that we're very close to, just and they said, so what are you going to go do there? You know, and I tried to explain, this is a conference, and different people speak about God, you know, coming from different paths of life. Some are very educated, some some less. But, you know, it's just sharing stories, you know, our stories relating to the story of Jesus. Oh, so what are you going to say? Well, I said, what I'm going to try to say is to say your story, your journey. And I said, I want to bring it parallel to the story of Esther. And they know Esther. And they know her story very well. So you know what they said immediately? So are you going to be our advocate? Are you going to be our witness? And if I make it through this without crying, you know, it will be a big victory. So let's go on. And yes, I came as their advocate. And my voice is very small. But I hope that it can be heard, at least in this room. It's obvious that God is doing something. I have witnessed it for the last year and a half. This is not about people that were chased away from their homes, which is a reality. This is not about people that lost their jobs, that they lost their country, that, you know, they're just walking around the street of Athens, you know, in strollers with babies, not knowing where the next meal will come from, and all this. All that is valid. But God, I think, is doing something bigger. I hope you brought a lot of salt with you in your pockets today. Take all this with a grain of salt. Think about it before you make any major decisions and you don't talk to me again. So he's doing something. He's doing something very big. And I have seen the opportunity, especially in the last months, that we all need to get on board because the ship is sailing and we're going to stay in the harbor. I don't think that I can change anyone. I don't think you can change anybody, too. I don't think we can change ourselves sometimes. God can change us. So, you know, when I hear these expressions, you know, we will convert, we will change, we can do that. We can show people the way to God, and that is through Jesus Christ, and that's all. That's where our job finishes. And like this brother yesterday, which the name, please, Bob Goff. You know, it's like faith expressed through love. That's it. And it is through that love they will understand, you know, what we're about and what do we mean. He's calling people from every corner of the world to create a new church. Isaiah 41:9, I've called you from the ends of the earth. I know he's talking to Israel, but that applies to his people. And they are his people and we are his people. He's calling his people. You know, there were Christians in Damascus way before there were Christians in the West, right? That Paul was after. I'm going to get a surgery one of these days. This is just annoying. I think the doors are finally open. And anybody can get handkerchiefs faster than I can. Thank you. Thanks. The doors are finally open to the Middle Eastern world, not for us to go in, but for them to get out. Recently, you know, we celebrated the Easter in Greece, the resurrection, rather, of Jesus Christ. And they were asking me, like, days before, are we going to have a celebration about Easter? Are we going to have a... What are you talking about? You're Muslims. Do you know what we celebrate? They said, yes, the resurrection of Jesus. Many of them believe in the resurrection of Jesus. And they love Jesus. But for years and years, they couldn't say it. So we did have a celebration. There's a beautiful song. I'm not going to play you the song, but you can find it. Keep a note, please. By this Lebanese Christian. Her name is Feiruz. Feiruz. And she is revered by all Muslims, by all the Muslim world, although she's a Christian. She's like, you know, the Lamborghini of singers. There's nobody bigger than... She's like in her 80s now, Feiruz. And they said, you know, she used to be just one of the most beautiful women in the Middle East. She has this flagship song that is called Wa Habibi, translated, My Love. And it is a hymn of Mary, of Miriam, to her son when he's on the cross. And you can find the lyrics translated. You know, she's asking, what did you do? Why they have you up there? You know, she's asking him because she cannot understand. So my daughter has brought me this speakerphone that you can, you know, Bluetooth with your phone. So I played that song to them that day, and I thought, well, let's see what happens. There was not a dry eye. It was like maybe over 100 people, you know, sobbing and crying. And I told them that day, you know what the word church means in Greek? What? Ekklesia. Ekklesia means the, like everybody knows, the called ones, the invited ones. Huh? But many are the invited, few are the elect. So I said, you know what? You are the Ekklesia. And they all said, I'm in. I said, God has called you here. There's many places in Athens to go get food and clothes and everything that we can give them. But they come repeatedly and consistently. And some of you have been there. Randy and Evelyn were there for a month. Phil, there's Phil, Dan, Chris, many of you. Catherine, have been to see, you know, what is going on, what God is doing. Their witnesses as well. Danny and Judy have been there. So when I sit in the back sometimes, you know, before we start, we have like an hour they call it the prayer time. They don't understand worship yet. So, you know, they know 1:30 that we stop everything. We have English lessons. I'll show you a few pictures later. And they know 1:30 that we stop and they all sit down for a prayer time. So we just, it's always encouragement. And I do this encouragement as a mother because I'm Mama Eleni, which is, you know, practical reasons. But, you know, we need to know who the boss is, right? Like in Mafia. So, you know, we do our little lesson and it's all always encouragement. Sometimes, you know, I'll be running in the back and they're all sitting down just like you are, quietly. And I look and think, that's the church. It's different. It has different passports. They're not all where we need to be, but are we? So, I mean, we've had people that consistently came for a year until they left, you know, some country. They were relocated to receive asylum. Well, many details about how they come and how they're in transit in Greece and then they ask for asylum, but I wish we had another hour, but, you know, if you personally want to know and ask me later, I will tell you all about that. I'm seeing all that is happening more of an awakening of all people. And this situation with the refugees is just, I don't want to say the excuse, but, you know, just please help me with another better word. Opportunity. Maybe it's the awakening of many of the Christless Christian countries like Greece. Greece claims to be a Christian country, but people, for the most part, do not know Jesus. Okay, many of the Christless Christian churches that the name of Jesus is not honored. You know, the church is so strong and big that it's the church. You know what the Greek Orthodox Church says? The church saves. The church does not save anybody. The church will be saved. Or maybe Christless Christian homes or Christless Christian universities. Maybe it's a time for us to see this renovation, this restoration, because it's been a long time since we had one. I think that this is part of God's plan to continuously do something new, doesn't he? You know, this is his nature. Of rebirth, of us. Every morning we wake up, you know, we're new. We feel different. We know more or less. There's always something new. Isaiah 43:19. I'm making something new. Every day. And, you know, when he walks around in this process of making something new, you know, the blind get to see, the paralyzed get to walk, the prostitutes, you know, kneel at his feet. You know, I'm strange, and most of you know it. but I'm in love with these people. Sometimes I wonder, why do you love them so much? I would do anything for them. I love everything. I've always loved their language. It's just melodious and beautiful, and slowly, slowly I'm learning it because I've spent so much time with them in the last year and a half that that's all I hear, you know, all day long, 10 hours a day. I hear Arabic. But I just love, you know, I even love their head covers, their hijabs, that's what they call them. When you hug them, you know, they, you feel it on your face. I love that. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother if they never take them out, if that's what they like. You know, it does bother some of us, but it's something, you know, to think about. Why would it? Because they're not like us? You know, like, again, Galatians 5:6, faith expressed in love. It's not about their culture, their hijab, and my culture. You know, I highlight my hair and I have it short. Some of you, you know, have it long, and some of you braid it, like my dear friend Anne. It's just different. So what about if it is just about God's culture? And probably, you know, probably this is the only way that we can understand what's going on. Maybe this is the only way that everything will make sense. It was difficult for me in the beginning. If you knew me 3 years ago and my perspective and what I would say about the Muslim world, you wouldn't like me at all. I didn't like me either. But, you know, God had a plan to change me. You know, just because we have our own logic, we assume God thinks like us, right? And I assume that you should think like me. And if you don't, why don't you? You know, because this is my logic. But God has a different logic. And his logic is illogical for us. Nick Ripkin, who is this is his fake name or pal name or whatever you call it, was a missionary in Somalia. Two of the books that he has written, just if you really want to understand more about what God is doing, not just in the Muslim world, but, you know, all over. It's the insanity of God and the insanity of obedience. The insanity of God will be in a movie soon, August the 30th. Because, yes, for our logic, God is insane. I know this just sounds a little... But, you know, if there's a dead person in the ground and comes out, you know, if somebody's, you know, all that Jesus did on earth, you know, nothing fits our logic. We don't have any wardrobe, you know, to dress what God does. And we don't have any wardrobe to dress his mandate, which is love people, regardless. You know, the first, our point of view, our perspective, think about it, it's the Old Testament perspective. It's, you do wrong to me. What is my natural inclination?
Revenge.
I'll do wrong to you, right? Just to bring a balance. And this is really how God worked, you know, in the Old, you know, Testament. Eye for an eye. They bother us. They put bombs. Well, let's just nuke them out. Find a way. So they just disappear, and they won't bother us anymore. Really? Maybe not, because we're not in that season. We're in the season of grace. And Jesus commands us exactly the opposite. So we're in the New Testament. We're not in the Old Testament. And I hear people a lot of the times, you know, just Christians, just this revengeful nature, like, you know, this is logic. We need to get back at them. And haven't we? By creating, you know, more chaos and more pain. Probably the one verse, 1 John 4:18, that defines what we do at Ammonia, how God is using us and me in particular, how what gives me fuel every day is that perfect love casts out fear. Love him, and nothing will go wrong. And nothing really has gone, you know, wrong, terribly wrong. Very little things. You know, for a church building, which, by the way, we are the only, funny because I'm there, the only church building in Athens that has opened its doors to the refugees, like with no control. The door is open, you know. I mean, they ring the bell to come in, but There's no clearance. Just come in. And nothing has gone wrong. Most of the church buildings are afraid to do it. Now, there are organizations and soup kitchens and different, you know, refugee centers that, you know, they have like 3-4 men at the door and 3-4 men at the other door, you know, to check who comes in. And you know why I think nothing has gone wrong? Because everybody that enters those double doors, for you that know those doors, God has brought him in. And this is predictably right every time. Because their time with us, I can see, you know, how everything is different. You know, in the beginning they come in, they see crosses, you know, they see, they don't know. They've never been in a place like this. They don't understand. And slowly, slowly, I see them understanding before my eyes, very fast, like fast motion. Time comes for them to go. And a lot of them stand in front of the door saying, we don't want to go. I mean, they've got asylum, you know, they can be relocated in much better countries with a lot of money, you know. And they'll stand at the door and say, we cannot physically leave, you know, time after time. So you know that God, you know, is working in their hearts. For the first time, they're free to express how they feel. So perfect love indeed casts out fear. We need, again, to be looking, I think, our perspective needs to be, and whom am I to say this, just my little, you know, humble suggestion, with kingdom eyes, you know, with kingdom glasses. It's a different kind of lenses. Because if we see the little picture, it's frightening and it's intimidating. But if we just, you know, kind of pull back, you know, and wear those glasses of the kingdom, where I will be reminded every second that, you know, Mary's eternal destiny is at stake. It's not my safety. It's not my social security. It's not, you know, it's not none of that. It's your eternity and your eternity. Then that just changes, right? Changes the focus. You know, the Bible is filled. I don't know why we're so, some of us, so, you know, surprised by all that is going on. We've been taught this story since we were little kids, you know, Daniel, Joseph, Jesus, Ruth, immigrants, refugees, runaways. Should we embrace these people regardless? Should we love them? Should we show them the way to God through Jesus Christ, who is the expression of God? This is who Jesus is. God's heart opens, and Jesus comes out. You know, the sentence, love your neighbor as yourself, which is the theme of our retreat that's coming up in June in Greece. If you are interested in that, let me know. Is love your neighbor as yourself, right? You know, this is not just a cute little sweet sentence that we can cross stitch on little pillows on our couch. It's a serious mandate. One of our friends who came, Dan McVeigh, I have to refer to his name, from ACU, who is a professor of Islamic studies, came on their spring break. They're in Oxford for 10 days to stay in Greece, and he thought that he was coming for a holiday. But the first day he came to Omonia, they never left. I don't think they saw the Parthenon. I'm not sure that they did. They were there every day. And being a professor of Islamic studies, very comfortable with the Quran, he helped us a lot understand. He helped us understand the beginning of the, you know, Hagar and Ishmael, and how both Ishmael and Isaac were blessed. Sometimes we think that Ishmael was cursed. He was not cursed. Ishmael was saved by water in the desert, right? He was a sacrifice too. He was sent away. And then, you know, Isaac, you know, was rescued by blood, because, you know, the ram, you know, was, they were both blessed. And if we really follow the stories of both of them, they're parallel. They both had 12 children. Anyway, beautiful stories that Brother McVeigh helped us understand. And then he helped, you know, our Muslim friends also relate, you know, to all these stories. Beautiful, beautiful. They leave and he writes us a letter. And he says, he's always been exposed to Muslim people. This was not his first time. But he said, Omonia is not a church. Omonia is the kingdom. Meant a lot coming from him, you know, knowing as much as he does, you know, the Muslim faith and the Christian faith. You know, if we are followers of Christ, truly, loving the runaways and the refugees and the immigrants and the, you know, whoever these strangers are, or dressing the naked, or feeding the hungry, or visiting the sick, or visiting the prisoner, it's not charity. We're not doing this because we're nice, because we're Christian people. Christian people are nice. This is because we're followers of Christ. This is part of who we are. It's a mandate to identify. I don't think we do have a choice.
We're created in Christ to do good works.
Yes. That we're prepared from the beginning of time for us. You know, it is part of his revolutionary plan to make everything new. Philippians 2:10-11, until every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess. All of this just now makes sense to me, this last year and a half. Because, you know, they will confess the name of Jesus Christ. They're kneeling before him. So many of them come and say, please pray for us. And you know, a lot of our refugee families that left there in Europe, they will, every day, some of you know how my phone rings. It's, how's the church? They recognize the authority of the church. They're asking how the church is. Why don't you come over here and start a church in Norway, Mama, with Baba Alexander? Why? We go to the churches there, like to the evangelical churches, and they don't let us in because our wives are wearing hijabs. So, you know, ignorance is not a good, you know, consultant. Ignorance and fear. But perfect love does cast out fear. I want to show you just a couple of, I don't know how much time we have. Woo, 5 minutes. Well, I'll say this so I can finish with this, and then I can, you know, maybe as much time as we have to show you a few visuals. I do stay up at night. I go home late every day. Those that you came, you went home late, you know, not before 8, 9, 10 o'clock. From, you know, from the morning, and I stay up at night because they request of me, you know, each and every time, pray for us, pray, you know, for different, you know, requests they have or needs. And I do pray for them one by one, and I bring them to the foot of the cross because this is the only place that any of this makes sense. I wake up in the morning and I see miracles. We've seen people walk that were in a wheelchair. We've seen miracles in dead ends with organizations and government agencies that nobody can break. You know, it's like it's done, but not. You know, every day, you know, we see miracles. I really think I've been upgraded for life. And I'm in a cloud, and in that cloud I've seen the kingdom. And if I die tomorrow, it's fine. I've seen the kingdom. I want to invite you. Start thinking. I know all of you are. You wouldn't be here otherwise. And you're all dear friends. And I really appreciate your kindness, your generosity. A lot of you came. A lot of you have given help, you know, for what we're doing. You're going to see what we're doing just shortly. I got to move fast. My walk with Christ finally makes sense. For years, I knew, although I've been kind of, that's a cliche, raised in the church, well, with a Christian home, in a Christian home. I always knew there's something more. You know, I'm 57, but I was never just settled that, okay, you know. No, I knew something big would happen. I was expecting it. And I was always envisioning the doors of our church building would be open and people would come in. Not to create a good fame and reputation for us, but to know who God is. For their lives to make sense. And this has happened. you know, just like Alexander is still thinking that there's going to be some kind of a medicine one day that will turn his hair black. Forget that. But, you know, my dream, my vision, my desire, and everybody's, is true that people are coming to Christ like never before. Dan Bussell gave us a little the percentage of people coming to Christ in the last 20 years are?
More Muslims have come to Christ in the last 20 years than 1,400 years before combined.
And if Muslims are coming to Christ, what is wrong with the rest of the world coming to Christ? Because there's a lot that needs Jesus. It's not just the Muslims. There's a lot of, you know, people that need Jesus. So, and you know, there are organizations in Greece that have helped us carry this through. It is only in the last, you know, few months that our fellow Christians from the Church of Christ are, you know, finally, you know, seeing the need. One of the pioneers of this is M. Arnett, Madame Busson Jackson here, and Chris Moore, that are sending, you know, a big number of people, like 47, 57 people this summer. We're still looking for long-term workers, though. We're expanding. They are helping us rent the upstairs floor of the church building, which is as big as the downstairs, like about 3,000 square feet, because we're running out of room. You know, the church is expanding. I don't mean just the church at Ammonia. The church is not shrinking. The church is expanding. Satan would like for us to think that it's getting smaller, but no, it's getting bigger, because Jesus is coming soon, and we can hear his steps.
Let's see. No, go back. No, just exit, please.
Okay.
You know what? Remember when I told you, I should have showed you this earlier. When go to the last one, but don't open it. Just
this
a second. Yeah, just 1 minute. You know, I told you that Alexander was on first class, and business class, and I was, and I came down to see him. Guess what he was doing? He was wine tasting. there was a steward there with four bottles of wine. Who's it now? How interesting. I'm living the big life. Okay. Just for 11 hours.
The kitchen picture. These
are the soft, tender hijabs that cover the soft and the tender hearts of these women. This is the kitchen crew. They're the ones that are cooking. The two women on the left are from Syria, and the women in the right are from Afghanistan. And talk about beautiful women, skilled, beautiful hands, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful people.
Which one?
This is our church sanctuary, you know, which is messy. There's, you know, people all over, and just every day it's a home. They come, and so many of them say when they get out of the metro, they run to come to the building because they know they're coming home. We finally have babies. We have pregnant women. We have children. We have old people. We have young people. You know? Dan Bussell told us last September, almost like a prophetic word. He said, you know, sometimes things finish, not die, just finish, and something new, you know, is born. And this is what has happened in our little church. This, you know, some of us in one of our gatherings. Let's go to the get that out. That was just to fix your mood. And I know you all wanted to see Alex, right?
Yes. So,
Let's go to the Agape Project. Okay, so if you need to go, please feel free to go. We're just not going to move until the next class comes.
Before they go, though, I want to say something.
Uh-huh. Please.
There are a number of you have been over there, and I know that when I went, I asked her about money needs. And she said, Kathy, she said, what we need even more than money is we need the bodies.